It is almost 7 p.m. Stay tuned for Off the Hook coming up. Once again, this is WBAI New York 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned.
Well, hello there. It's WBAI New York, and it's 7 o'clock, time once again for another edition of Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Only we bomb for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood. Monday we know.
Very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yeah.
We have Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
We have Gila.
Good evening.
And we have Alex.
Hello, hello.
All right. Well, hope you're all having a nice evening tonight, because it's going to get a little dark. We have some breaking news that we... just found out about not too long ago concerning our friend Virgil Griffith, who has been held in prison for lo these many months, and in fact has been going through hell since 2019. Briefly, this is the case that we've talked about a number of times on this show. Not nearly enough, because when you're dealing with legal cases, you have to kind of temper your remarks. You don't want to influence things. You don't want things to, you come back and hurt the people that that you care about, that you're trying to help. But really, it's gotten to the point of being a Kafka novel. It really has. The case, briefly, is that Virgil went to North Korea in defiance of the Trump ban. He's an American citizen. Trump said American citizens no longer allowed to go to North Korea. I think in 2017 he decreed this. Never before been the case. I went to North Korea. Many friends I know have gone to North Korea. Why? Because we can't go to Mars. That's why. It's a different planet. It's like going to a place where gravity doesn't work. It's the most bizarre, unusual, crazy place. And Virgil is one of the most curious people that I've ever had the pleasure of meeting, and both meanings to the word curious. He is a curious person in that he's odd and eccentric and kind of a misfit, but he's also somebody who has a very keen sense of curiosity, as many of us in the hacker world do. And, of course, he couldn't resist going, and it was easy to go. You know, you didn't have to tell the State Department that you were going to North Korea, especially when you live in Singapore, which he did. But he decided to ask anyway, and was surprised when they said, no, you can't go. and then he made the mistake, and he knows this was a mistake. It was a big mistake. He went anyway. But we all thought that the worst that could happen was he would be fined, or he would maybe lose his passport. That's the worst case scenario. Instead, the U.S. government has come down on him like he is an enemy of the state, like he is somebody who is Kim Jong-un's best friend. Believe me, Virgil is not somebody who sides with a dictatorial regime or anything remotely undemocratic or anti-human rights. I mean, it's just it's the height of absurdity. Anyway, so he has he had been held in federal prison, was finally released to the care of his parents, right in time for the whole COVID outbreak to start happening. And he wasn't allowed to use the internet. And get this, he wasn't allowed to do anything involving cryptocurrency because the feds are so afraid of cryptocurrency. They think, I don't know what they think. It's possible here, but they thought that Virgil plus cryptocurrency could equal complete mayhem. So part of the conditions of him staying out of prison was that he has to stay away from cryptocurrency. Okay, great. No problem. Until his lawyers told him, we need you to pay us. Please get the money from your crypto account. And that right there, following his lawyer's advice, doing what they told him to do, which they admitted in court, is what happened. They said it was okay. They said it wouldn't be a problem, wouldn't be a violation of any court order. And, well, the federal government thought differently and threw him into prison, where he's been since this summer, for something that was not even his fault. He was simply doing what his lawyers told him to do. Now, okay, so then you fast forward to September, when his trial is supposed to begin. That's when you get your day in court. That's when you get to stand up and say, okay, Your Honor, this is what I did and why, and this is what was misunderstood. But here's the thing, and I think a lot of people might not understand this. When you are accused of the most heinous of crimes, i.e. siding with a horrible regime like North Korea, and working against your own red, white, and blue country, people start to believe that. And when people start to believe that, you start to worry about what the jury will be like, because it's very easy. You know, the federal government has a very impressive record of convictions. Alex can correct me, I'm sure, but I think it's well over 90%. And when you're faced with that, we've seen this with Kevin Mitnick. We've seen this with Bernie. We've seen this with Fiber. We've seen this with hundreds and hundreds of people over the years that have been faced against this incredible adversary known as the federal justice system. You can't win. You can try to have your day in court, but here's the thing. If you have that day in court and it doesn't work, which it's very likely not to, you wind up going to prison for much, much longer than you would if you simply take a deal and plead guilty. And that's why he pled guilty in September. I mean, that's my impression. That's not him saying this or anything like that. He's been nothing but remorseful and contrite. But I understand why somebody would feel compelled to. It does not mean that he is the person that they said he was. So anyway, that is what happened. That's the last thing that happened, actually. He pled guilty and was awaiting sentencing. And that sentencing was supposed to take place in January. And then it was postponed by his legal team. They postponed it until February. The whole thing is crazy, because here he is sitting in prison for months waiting to find out how long he has to sit in prison for a crime which, honestly, is the most absurd, ridiculous accusation that I've heard in many, many a year. And I've heard a lot of crazy accusations. Today, a memo was written a couple of days ago. Today it was granted by the court. I'm going to read what it says. It's addressed to the judge. We and it's from Virgil's legal team. We write respectfully to request that the sentencing hearing in the above matter be adjourned from February 2nd to April 7th or April 12th, 13th, or 14th of 2022. I mean, I guess those are the days they're free. We further request that the court order that the deadline for the defense's sentencing submission similarly be modified from January 18th to March 4th, and the deadline for the government's sentencing submission be modified from January 25th to March 18th. Without the additional time, despite our diligent efforts, we will not be ready for his sentencing due to circumstances beyond our and our client's control. We have conferred with the government, who does not oppose this continuance request and is amenable to the proposed deadlines. This is our second request for an adjournment. We make this request, and listen carefully to this, we make this request because since mid-December, we have been unable to visit with our client at the MDC due to COVID-19, despite repeated efforts to confer with him, and we are uncertain when that will change so that we can work with him to prepare for his sentencing. Before Christmas, Mr. Griffith contracted COVID-19 and was subsequently held in isolation for approximately 10 days. Counsel was unable to have any contact with him during that time. We were not allowed to visit or schedule video or telephone calls. Despite Mr. Griffith having since been released from isolation, there have not been any in-person attorney visits permitted at the MDC due to the COVID-19 outbreak at the facility. In addition, we have repeatedly tried to schedule calls with him, despite the facility not permitting call or video conferences without explanation. It was not until this Tuesday, January 12th, that we were able to have a telephone call with him. The prosecutors helped us secure this call, for which we are greatly appreciative. It is worth noting that the MDC's lockdown has also resulted in significantly reduced food rations, extremely limited opportunities to shower, lack of any time outside, and delayed access to necessary prescription medications for Mr. Griffith, imposing significant hardships on him. We do not make this request lightly and wish it was not necessary. All told, we have not been able to visit with our client in person since December 15th, 2021. And have not been able to see him via video since that same day. Accordingly, Mr. Griffith respectfully requests the court to grant this request for adjournment of sentencing and the proposed briefing schedule. As always, the undersigned are available to answer any questions the court may have. That was granted today. As if it was some kind of a favor to Virgil to delay sentencing another few months. And the bitter irony of this is that because they are unable to meet with him, he has to spend more time in prison waiting to find out what happens to him because they won't let his legal team even speak to him. This is America. This is what's happening right here in this country. I never thought this kind of a thing would be possible. But it's insane. How long does this go on for? How hard are they going to make it for him to simply survive as a human being? They gave him COVID. They cut him off from the world. They put him through the equivalent of torture. And he's not even at the point of finding out how does this end. For going to a country that Trump said you're not allowed to go to. And for answering questions about cryptocurrency, for talking about technology like we all do. For saying things that all of us are saying, all of us are reading about on the internet. You know, I want to share with you a story that also came out in the last couple of days, about North Korea. Do you know North Korea stole nearly $400 million in cryptocurrency in 2021, particularly Ethereum? Do you think they needed Virgil to do that? He was basically figuring out what they were up to, what they were doing, how this would work. And probably there would have been an article in many journals about this. And guess what? I'll bet it would have stopped. I'll bet it would have been fixed. There are massive holes that would have allowed them access to all this money in violation of sanctions. And the person basically speaking out openly about this is defined as the problem. It's insane. And I also want to read a little bit of another story, completely unrelated to this, having to do with Elizabeth Holmes. You might know that name, the Silicon Valley startup founder. She was convicted of fraud this month. She was found guilty on three counts of wire fraud, one count of conspiracy to commit wire fraud, facing a maximum sentence of 20 years in prison for each count. She lied to investors about her company's abilities so she could raise money for that company. And her trial was last September. Found guilty this month. Do you know when she's going to be sentenced? September. September of this year. 9 months. 9 months from when she was convicted. Do you think she's in prison? No. She's enjoying life on the outside. Someone who did something far worse than what Virgil is accused of. Well, I guess the way they're accusing him, they're trying to make him into some superhero villain. But I maintain that somebody who lies, which Virgil has never done, and steals, which Virgil has never done, is a far worse person. Do I think everybody should go to prison who commits a crime? No. But this, seeing a wealthy Silicon Valley a founder being found guilty of a crime, is basically given every opportunity to live their lives, whereas Virgil, deemed an enemy of the state, is literally being tortured in a federal facility right here in New York, given COVID, kept away from any human contact, having food rations cut for some reason, not being allowed access to medication, not being allowed access to attorneys. And we're supposed to say thank you for allowing him to sit there for another 3 months before being sentenced. You know, there are so many words I want to use right now, but because we're on the radio, I can't. But this is just too much. This is the breaking point. You know, we've talked about the injustice of this case for a number of years now, but we've held back. I think that time is over. I think it's time, even those of us who think that what he did was a threat. I mean, we all believe what he did was wrong, and he's the first to say that. But it was a mistake. If you think there were ulterior motives behind it, I think even those people would start saying, okay, you know what, enough. Enough. In the Kevin Mitnick case, we always had to battle the people who said, but he broke the law. Yeah, he did. He broke the law. How much is too much? How much prison time do you give somebody who broke the law? At what point do you say, we're human beings? This is wrong. This is the crime. How we treat this person? I think we got there. I think we're at that stage.
You know, E, it occurs to me that his alleged crimes produced no victims, whereas in the Holmes case, there were probably a lot more people that were victims.
Of course.
And in fact, in this case, I would argue he is the real victim here. He's the only victim. Everything
well,
else...
He would never say that. That's
no,
the
he
thing.
Wouldn't say that. But he is being not entitled to a speedy trial or access to vital things.
He pleaded guilty, so he doesn't get a trial. He doesn't get that.
Well, I'm sorry, but
he understands that. He understands that
the sentencing process,
and he feels terrible about what he did. He knows it was a mistake, but it was a mistake. It wasn't a plot. It wasn't something that, as you said, there were no victims. He wasn't plotting to hurt somebody. In the Elizabeth Holmes case, yeah, you know what? She was plotting to hurt somebody because she stole. She lied and was found guilty for it and should, you know, make it right. I agree with that. But, you know, depending on how you treat people in situations like this, it says a lot about you. And it also determines the path they're going to take. When I got into trouble decades ago, you know, I was basically in a situation where, according to the FBI, who, by the way, never trust what they say. Never trust what they say. They told Virgil, you know what, this is not a big deal. We're not going to do anything about you going to North Korea without permission. And it was a complete lie. In my case, they said, yeah, you know, we can send you to prison for over 50 years for what you did. And, you know, I stood before a judge and explained what it was exactly that I had done to compromise computer systems. And I explained to the company what they could do to fix things. I explained to the FBI. I was treated fairly. I was treated very fairly. I had to pay a small fine. I don't think I even paid a fine, actually. I think it was just for the computer time. I had to pay a few hundred bucks and was on some kind of supervised release for a number of months, which was expunged. And everything I've done since then has been a result of being treated fairly. It could have gone in a different way, and today it probably would have gone in a different way, and I would be a different person. I would not have any of the opportunities that I've had. I would not have had any of the successes that I've had. And who wins? Who wins when you do that to people? Alex, I know this something you want to say as well. And as a lawyer, you must recognize my frustration with the way the legal system works sometimes, but you have a much keener understanding of why it works that way. But I know that you feel the same way as far as just the injustice of this, the way Virgil has been treated throughout. But this especially, you know, being pushed back, you know, because it just isn't time for you. It's just awful.
Well, the whole situation is really absolutely horrendous. And, I want to reiterate something I've said on the show before, which is that, you know, my hands are tied to a certain extent in terms of what I can say, because I am, and my firm is assisting in some capacity with respect to the defense, and in particular with the forthcoming sentencing that will be happening now on April 12th will be the sentencing date for Virgil. But I will also say this, that we were only engaged to assist Virgil after he was remanded back to prison for violation of the bail condition and accessing his cryptocurrency account. So that what happened before we got involved. That happened actually right before I had joined my current law firm. So in any event, one thing I should clarify too, Emmanuel, is that Virgil's offense is being treated very, very seriously because it's not really about having traveled to North Korea. What the government had alleged here, and Virgil had pleaded guilty to this, is essentially a violation of the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, which is the sanctions that are imposed on North Korea. Now, coincidentally, that was the same statute that Trump had used to try to ban WeChat and TikTok through executive order in the United States the following summer. So this statute has got, I think, some issues to begin with. But I think that we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that Virgil did plead to that. You mentioned a whole host of issues and concerns that go into whether or not somebody pleads guilty. And I think that, look, that's absolutely correct. And what's happened here with Virgil and his treatment in the MDC is frankly, it's just not great. It's horrible. It's abhorrent. I mean, he's in the same facility that Ghislaine Maxwell is being held in as we speak, and others. A lot of other people that have done terrible, terrible things that are magnitudes and light years worse than what Virgil had done. But all of these conditions are affecting all of those people, every single one of them, not just Virgil either. And so these terrible lockdown conditions that are happening at the MDC, you know, we call every day and try to figure out if they're going to allow legal visits again. And every day we get the same answer, that no, legal visits aren't permitted. And we don't know when they are going to be permitted. And so you ask, well, what should we do? And they say, well, call back tomorrow. Maybe tomorrow will be different. So we've had very, very limited contact with Virgil. That said, here's a man who is really, really resilient. He's trying to do his best. He's keeping his spirits high as much as he possibly can in these terrible situations. And he's making the most of it. He's helping people over there, trying to help them figure out what they can do once they get outside. Now, he's being Virgil. He's being himself. He was running Dungeons and Dragons games. I mean, he's doing the things that he can do to help other people while he's in there. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that goes to his character. It goes to, I think, the power of his spirit. It is, to my mind, indomitable. So no matter what he's going through here, Emmanuel, we're talking about a strong human being who's going to get through it. It's not fair. It's not right. But, you know, I know I speak for the wider defense team, too, that, you know, we all really care for him very, very deeply. It's incredibly upsetting for me emotionally to go and see him sometimes because I just hate the fact that he's in there. I mean, here's a man, and not that, you know, education has anything to do with proportionality of punishment. But here's a guy who has a tremendous talent. He's a great mind. He has a PhD in neuroscience from Caltech. Understands the world of blockchain, cryptocurrency, information security, neuroscience. He's an extraordinary human being. He didn't hurt anybody. He didn't do anything that harmed anyone. And yet, you know, he's going to be – he's looking and staring down the barrel of between, I think, 63 and 78 months is what the plea deal had called for. And so I will reiterate once again that we should use this time – this additional 3 months that the defense did request, this additional 3 months to help prepare for the sentence, to help prepare a very powerful sentencing memorandum to hopefully convince the judge that leniency should be granted to Virgil in light of all of the circumstances, in light of his character. So once again, I reiterate that if you know Virgil, if you have anything good to say about him, if he helped you out in any respect, you know, please get in touch with me. You know, there's lots of ways that you can contact me, either through this show, through oth@2600.com, or my email address, aurbellis, A-U-R-B-E-L-I-S, @kroll.com, that's C-R-O-W-E-L-L.com. And I'd be happy to speak with you about drafting a letter of support that could eventually and possibly go into the sentencing memorandum and go before the judge and make a measurable difference in terms of what Virgil is ultimately sentenced to on April 12th. And the whole world is watching this case. This is a very, very unique case, both for people that work in cryptocurrency, people that work in blockchain, people that travel overseas, for academics that go and speak at conferences overseas. So the ramifications of this case are very, very far ranging. And we all hope, but I know that there are a lot of people are coming together to support Virgil, as I know you are, man.
Well, I do have to disagree with one thing slightly that you said, as far as punishment not being proportional to education. I think it might be in this case, but not in the way that you're suggesting. I think his education, his intelligence, is working against him. In other words, he's not being treated better because he's educated. He's being treated worse because he's educated, seen as a threat, seen as a danger. You know, it's like, okay, here's a parallel for you. You know, when you're one of these geeky kids in school, you know, somebody that the jocks don't understand, what do? They stuff you into a locker. It's exactly what's being done to him right now. He's being stuck into a locker at MDC or whatever you call the hellhole he's in, because people don't understand him. because people haven't taken the time to listen, because people are assuming the worst. You know, I know he can't speak about this. He pled guilty, and I totally understand that. But I can. I can say that, you know, there is no way in hell that the person I know would help a regime like North Korea, would try and make the sanctions against them go away. What he would try to do is figure out how that system worked and show the security holes in it. Absolutely. And that's something that I would be interested in doing, too.
Or how it could benefit the widest of the population there, not some specific government program or aim.
Yeah, well, I mean, he wouldn't redefine what the sanctions are, but he would certainly try and shine light onto something, onto a flawed system. And we just read, you know, they're stealing cryptocurrency. It's happening. It was happening then. You know, it's, yeah, okay, fine. Going to North Korea, that was the door. That was the door that allowed them to say, oh, you did something that you shouldn't have done. Well, let's look closer at you. And it led to far worse things. Go ahead, Rob.
And I think what we're seeing here, you touched on it with the fact that, you know, in the Mitnick case, in the Bernie S. case, in so many cases with people we know and people we know of and have been talked about over the decades of this program, we have seen people sentenced excessively, treated excessively poorly because they did things that the general public doesn't understand. This is right up there with Kevin Mitnick not being able to use a touch-tone phone, or, you know, them fearing that he's going to whistle into the phone and launch nuclear missiles somewhere. Because cryptocurrency, right now, it's a very mysterious thing for most people. Some of us understand how it works. Some of us have an inkling. For some of us, it's just something that keeps showing up in the headlines and seems scary. It's a mystery, and it's everywhere. And it is a headline-grabbing thing right now that you can say, well, this guy was giving cryptocurrency information to the enemy, to North Korea, when in practice, I don't think he would have been telling them anything they couldn't have looked up on Wikipedia. But he is a scapegoat. He is being punished because he is playing with something mysterious, and people are not sure what kind of mysterious powers he has around it, or what kind of mysterious powers he's granted to other people. And he's suffering as a result. And it's unfair. It was unfair in Kevin Mitnick's case. It was unfair in Bernie's case. It's unfair in this case.
And just to illustrate a little bit the cryptocurrency connection, the reason he had gone to North Korea, well, actually, the reason he went to North Korea was curiosity, like I described before. You know, if you're not curious about a place like that, I don't understand you, because it's just so bizarre and weird, and you know, the way I've described it, I know has inspired other people to go there as well, not to support the regime, to see this completely alien, different society, and kind of shudder a little bit because it's so scary. But he went there because they were having a cryptocurrency conference in Pyongyang, in North Korea. Now, how bizarre is that? And as somebody who is into cryptocurrency, who actually understands the mechanisms of it far more than I ever could, he wanted to see what they were up to, you know, what they were saying. And one of the things he was accused of was answering their questions. Because somebody at the conference asked him a question, and he had the audacity to answer the question. Two things. As Rob said, you can find this information on the internet very, very easily. And two, when you're in North Korea and somebody asks you a question, you really should answer it, because being rude in North Korea, that can be a danger to your life. And he was well aware of that. It's ironic because, you know, when he went there, we were concerned that he would say something in his honest way that might offend them, and he could wind up in a North Korean prison. What an idiot I was to believe that was where the threat was. The threat was here. The threat was in this country all along. And I can only imagine the mileage that the North Koreans are getting out of that, which is simply insane. Yes, Alex.
Yeah, I mean, the issue of having answered questions is a bit, I guess it's a bit nuanced in a sense, because, you know, when you're dealing with this IEPA statute, the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, that there is essentially a carve-out or something known as the Berman Amendment that essentially notes that the First Amendment still protects you while you're over there. And if you're talking about information that would be publicly available, you know, for instance, you know, like a gumbo recipe or something that is, you know, available through Google and is in a set form, the fact that it's, you know, a gumbo recipe that's set in a form on a page that is static makes a difference in terms of whether or not you have violated the law. Whereas if you just answered and gave your own off-the-cuff gumbo recipe, you know, that, you know, was transferring knowledge over to North Korea, there could be a different outcome. So there are all these bizarre nuances with this particular statute that make it very difficult for somebody to know whether or not they are crossing a line.
Exactly. Alex, do you think the average person knows any of that? You know,
no,
do you think if he had been told this, that, you know, if you continue to try and figure out the system, you might be in violation. You think he would have continued? It all came as a big shock to everybody. I mean, it's easy to say now that, oh, you violated this and it's clearly written here. The average person has no conception of that. And it's crazy to think that they have this LexisNexis database inside their head that's going to tell them exactly what they're doing wrong at any particular moment. You know, I was completely floored when they came after him the way they came after him. Like I said, I thought the worst that would happen would be some kind of a fine for traveling to the country or losing your passport, possibly worst case scenario. Nobody has ever, ever gotten into this kind of trouble just for going to North Korea. And for answering questions and for trying to figure out how a particular system might be able to be compromised, hey, that's what we do. That's what we do on this show. That's what we do in the magazine. That's what we do in the conferences. So where is that line? At what point do you know that you've crossed the line and you've done something now that's triggered some kind of crazy legal response that'll wind up throwing you in some dungeon someplace for years at a time? And get subjected to deadly diseases and horrible conditions. You know, there's just so much here that is new to me that I didn't think was a reality that was so close to us.
This is the same federal government that was opening up communication and diplomatic ties in the previous administration with North Korea. And where prior to even those overtures of diplomacy, official diplomacy, yes, from a president literally going there and shaking hands with the North Korean leader. Before that, there were plenty of excursions of media and tourists alike, even former basketball stars promoting their own crypto coins, you know, wearing T-shirts. And I mean, this was not unusual terrain for visitors of North Korea. And I find the real paradox in then sort of relaxing of official ties under the previous administration, while at the same time imposing this upon other Americans. So the leadership and president gets the glad hand there, but anything like stuff before that, even under a warming of relations, is forbidden now. It's very, very odd to me.
And every year, basically, pressure is being put upon the administration to rescind that that ban of travel to North Korea, because, you know, it's a crazy regime. But we're not supposedly a crazy regime, where our people are allowed the right to travel wherever they wish, and it's just something that is so unusual for us to have to fathom as a reality. So that right away, I mean, that's the starting point of all of Virgil's troubles. But there is more to this case. And like I said, we just found out about this before the show. And again, Alex, can you give out information so if people who want to help can do so? And then we'll move on to some other topics tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to repeat myself yet again that one of the ways in which you can help here, and we do have an opportunity now, given that there's, you know, about 3 months before Virgil is going to be sentenced, is to draft a letter of support. if you know Virgil, if you know of his character, if you've been in contact with him and he's made some kind of difference in your life, a positive difference, a change, he spoke to you at a conference, gave you a kind word, whatever it is, if you have something to say about him, we would love to speak with you about drafting a support letter. And you can contact me through OTH at 2600.com if that's easy, if that's easier for you. Or you can email me directly at my law firm, which is A. Urbelis, A-U-R-B-E-L-I-S. That's Lima, India, Sierra at the end there, at Kroll, C-R-O-W-E-L-L, as in Echo, Lima, Lima.com. And again, I'd be very happy to speak with anybody who wants to draft a support letter and provide you some guidelines, put you in touch with the wider defense team. I think we have an opportunity to help Virgil now with this time. We have to take advantage of it. And there will be a sentencing memorandum that's going to be submitted to the court. Your letter could be part of that sentencing memorandum and, or be referenced in that sentencing memorandum. And that sentencing memorandum is going to go into a lot of issues, things about, you know, the disparity of sentences, you know, between this case and others, you know, all the different types of research that would ordinarily go into that. I don't want to speak too much about strategy or things that are beyond what would ordinarily be placed in there. But please do get in contact with us. We think it's imperative. The time is of the essence. And let's do our level best to help somebody who's been a friend of this community for literally decades.
Alex, I know you're trying to put a positive spin on this by saying we now have the opportunity to help him. But the case was resolved in September, all right? There was October, there was November, there was December, and there was January for us to be able to help by writing these letters. I don't understand why we need February and March and April now as additional time, and what happens if they decide that, no, he still can't meet with his lawyers for those months. Does he simply get it pushed back even further? How long does this go on for? And when do we start saying, no, this isn't a good thing. This isn't an opportunity. This is abuse. And we really need to challenge this, because I don't see that happening. I don't see us standing up and saying, this is wrong. It has to stop. It has to stop now. And I see a lot of motions and a lot of gratitude towards the people that are in charge of the torture. And it's just, there's something about this that really rubs me the wrong way.
Like, it's a very difficult position that Virgil is in right now. This time period between pleading guilty and being sentenced is extraordinarily sensitive, and that's why I think, you know, he has to tread very, very lightly in terms of what he says, to whom he speaks, with whom he communicates. You know, all of this can work against him in a lot of ways, and he's got to be very, very careful.
And he has been. He's been treading extremely lightly. You know, he's been a model prisoner, as you have said. He hasn't, you know, pissed off anybody or violated any of the rules the court has set aside. I'm talking about the rest of us. I'm talking about us on the outside. You know, I just think we're being a little too nice.
Well, maybe. But, you know, look, to be fair, though, you know, it was the prosecutors and the U.S. attorneys that did help try to schedule a conference call with Virgil's defense team, you know, while he was at the MDC in isolation. And I think without their intervention, they might not have even been able to speak to Virgil then. You know, and
but
this
that's wrong. That is so
what's going on at the MDC.
Alex, that is so wrong. I mean, the fact that they were able to do it, great. But the fact that he had to wait months for that to happen, and the fact that they can't visit him, and they can't have a video conference call with him, and he can't have any visitors, and he's in these conditions, all of that is so wrong.
It's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. But, you know, it's what's happening at the MDC. It's not necessarily the prosecutor's fault here. I do want to be clear about that. This is an MDC policy that is way beyond their control. They don't have any ability to determine or set policy, you know, within the MDC. The MDC is because of the Omicron variant running rampant through the prison system. And my understanding, too, is that that most prisoners are not getting a booster shot either. So
yeah,
these are
exactly these things. And then he wasn't requesting to go to the MDC. He was requesting to go to a much nicer place where this kind of thing wouldn't be happening. And that was denied. Well, this is intentional.
The judge actually did agree to recommend that Virgil not go to the MDC and be sent over to the Essex County facility where he was being held prior to trial as well, which is just on the outskirts of Newark, New Jersey.
So why is he at MDC then? What made him go there?
The Bureau of Prisons decided ultimately that Virgil would go to MDC and not to Essex County, which is unfortunate. But Judge Castell did, in fact, recommend on the record that Virgil should go to Essex County and not the Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn.
And nobody can override the Bureau of Prisons when they make a decision like this.
I don't think there is an ability to do that. You know, it would have to probably you'd have to contest it in a manner, I think, and find that it was arbitrary and capricious, which is nearly impossible to do in a legal setting. He'd be way out of there by the time you even had that case decided. Mm-hmm. And so it's a terrible situation that he's in. It's exacerbated by the coronavirus. It's exacerbated by the isolation that he feels and all the various factors that you went into, Emmanuel. It absolutely is. And when does it end? We don't necessarily know, because the MDC has to get their hands around the fact that they need to get the coronavirus under control. Because if he cannot participate with his defense counsel, it's going to be very difficult to draft an effective sentencing memorandum. If they can't draft an effective sentencing memorandum, then those extra months at the MDC will be for naught. Because these extra months that he's spending at the MDC will hopefully make a measurable difference if we come together as a community to draft letters of support to show the world that we care about Virgil and what's happening to him. So we have to take advantage of this time to make sure that Virgil's continued suffering in this horrible place where he is not in vain. This is the time where we have to do this. Why I have to I keep putting a positive spin on it, even though the situation absolutely does suck for him. We need to come together now. And, you know, we can't just complain that it's unfair. Let's work together to make sure that this unfairness that he's suffering through right now and continuing to suffer through actually makes a difference to his sentence. Because these extra weeks, and I thought it would probably be weeks and not months right before the new sentencing date had happened, the whole reasoning behind this is to make an effective case to the judge. And that's why his defense counsel had requested that adjournment. Because they cannot talk with Virgil right now. Nobody can talk with him. I haven't seen him since I think it was Veterans Day. It was the last time I went and saw him. So, you know, and even then, it was a crazy situation. They denied one of my colleagues entry, even though he was cleared and on the list, and he had come all the way up from the District of Columbia to visit with Virgil. And as I got in to see Virgil, they told me, okay, well, you know, you're going to have 20 minutes. You only have 20 minutes. Ordinarily, we would have, you know, well over an hour to speak. But that being said, you know, these things, you never know what the hell's going to happen. One of the guards there, you know, let us sit through this lockdown, didn't take Virgil out, you know, made him step out for about 5 minutes. And then he came back and then we were able to spend, you know, about 3 hours together. So, you know, that was great, I think, just on a personal and professional level.
All right. Well, we all appreciate your efforts, Alex, and anyone else who is helping in any way. It certainly makes a huge difference. But yeah, it's a terrible situation. We're almost out of time, unfortunately. We are going to be continuing on overtime, but I wanted to quickly talk about another story that is basically taking place involving COVID, and that is the rollout today of the website, the federal website, that allows you to get free at-home rapid COVID testing kits. Now, I know, Rob, you found some indication that there might be some trouble with some of the addresses that are being entered into the system. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, a lot of people were going to the site, which is covidtests.gov. That's covidtests.gov. And there's a form there where you can fill in your address and request a shipment of 4 absolutely free COVID tests. What's been happening is a lot of people in multifamily dwellings, apartments, divided houses, things like that, have been finding that they can't order a test if their neighbor in the same building has ordered a test already, because there's a limit of 1 per dwelling. and not every dwelling is listed properly as a multifamily dwelling in the post office or the government's systems. So people are coming up against that. There is they are asking that people use the USPS's store, the contact form on there, to get in touch with the Postal Service, who's running this this whole thing, and start a file a service request. And you can do that at emailus.usps.com/s/the-postal-store-inquiry. Or you could just make your way to the Postal Service store, their online store, and go to the Contact Us link, which is that. And you can also contact the USPS help desk by phone at 1-800-ASK-USPS. That's 1-800-ASK-USPS, the corresponding digits on your phone dial. And that's where things are right now. Some people are not able to request their free tests. Some people have found they're able to if they fill in the form with the first line of their address, but not the second, and let the rest fill itself in. There are weird ways. So we want to hear about it. If you have come up against this glitch yourself and have found a way around it, please let us know, oth@2600.com, and we'll get that info out there as well.
You know, I was able to do this yesterday, a day before the site was supposedly going to launch. I had no trouble whatsoever. It was it wasn't like Obamacare when that website came out. This was very smooth, but it does follow the USPS rules. So you have to enter the address as the post office understands it. Now, you can't use a P.O. box. I kind of understand why, because a P.O. box isn't a household necessarily. You do have to use an actual address. And you can't use a commercial address. You can't use a mail drop. You have to use an actual street address, which, you know, that might be unacceptable for some people. But, you know, USPS already has that information. I think you can put in any name. I don't think you have to put in your actual name. You do have to put in an email address, I believe, so that they can tell you it's on the way and things like that. But, you know, mess around with it. And you can send these things to other addresses, too. If your grandmother needs a test, you can do that for her. You don't have to be the person at that address. I'm not sure that's the intention of the site, but it does work that way. But it is smooth. It does work. It's fairly quick. And, you know, I had no real trouble with it. And I usually do have trouble with these things.
I hope people take advantage of this for real good. Like, you know, not trying to do anything silly or like resell or something like that.
Oh, God, no.
I really hope it isn't exploited in that way. But rather people... get as many as they can and then distribute them, help the post office, as it were, distribute them even more widely than those limitations might set up.
No, this is a good thing. I know we like to complain about a lot of things, but getting all these tests, that's a good thing. Can we get more? Yes, we should do more. But let's acknowledge that this is the right move, and this is something we should take advantage of and help other people take advantage of it.
And pay attention to when they expire. Maybe they have a little bit of a shelf life. Maybe save it for later. Whatever you need, you know, it's really going to be interesting. So, and I'm curious what people notice about them, what kind of tests they are, and so forth.
Let's take care of each other and get through the crisis. Write to us, oth@2600.com. We are out of here for now. Join us on Overtime at YouTube. Channel 2600 is the name of the channel. And follow the link that's on the top of the 2600.com page. Join us on WBAI next week, 7 p.m. Good night.